Welcome back to the second hour now of World Crisis Radio. This is your host, Webster Tarpley, Washington, D.C. Just rounding out the last point, the Ukraine natural gas crisis, in other words, the ability of the IMF NATO puppet Yushchenko regime in Ukraine to cut natural gas coming from Russia into Western Europe is increased now by the fact that Ukraine is bankrupt and the Ukrainian state, former state gas company Naftogaz, is bankrupt, means that once Ukraine defaults and stops paying Russia completely, what is Russia going to do? Are they simply going to keep sending gas to Ukraine for nothing and hope that some of it gets through to Western Europe? You can see the tremendous possibilities for a crisis here. The Western European media can be counted on to respond in the Georgian manner. In other words, in Georgia, back in August, they blamed Russia. And this time, if the gas doesn't arrive, they won't blame Russia, they won't blame Poland or Ukraine or the Baltics. They'll blame Russia. Right now, Ukraine gets gas from Russia at $179 per 1,000 cubic meters and sells it west for $320 per 1,000 cubic meters. They practically double the price. Zbigniew Brzezinski, speaking in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, said Europe is too complacent, depending on Russia, for its energy. Now, let's abruptly shift gears. Let's get back to domestic. We need to do some coverage now on the Blagojevich scandal and the Illinois bipartisan combine, which is now being brought to light. And we're very honored to be joined once again by a friend of the broadcast. That is Evelyn Pringle, probably the leading expert on the Illinois bipartisan combine. Evelyn, welcome.
Well, nice to be here.
Thank you very much. Now, you've written these wonderful articles about the combine. I relied on you very much in my Obama biography, that is Obama, the unauthorized biography, which is at Amazon.com. What would you say we've learned now from the last week to 10 days of revelations about Blagojevich and this Senate seat?
Well, I would think that what we've learned is that what should have came out about 6 months ago, I mean, this was totally predictable that this eruption would come of the corruption in Illinois. The mainstream media in the states should have covered this, went in there and covered this, you know, 6 months ago at least. And this is just the start. When I look at that indictment, you can tell that Fitzgerald had that indictment all ready to go against Blagojevich. And Blagojevich just started this deal of selling that Senate seat, you know, right prior to when he was going to be arrested for the past corruption. So when I first looked at the indictment, all he did was tack what Blagojevich did in the last 2 months on the top of the old indictment, really. And that's what's grabbed the spotlight, because that is certainly, you know, really atrocious that he's that blatant that he'd try to sell the Senate seat. But, you know, that Obama is in this up to his neck. I mean, you know, the media is playing, you know, treating him so kind again, but no, Obama's in this as much as Blagojevich.
Yes, of course. I think we'd all agree with you on that. Now, maybe we focus on some specific individuals. What would you say we've learned about, well, maybe we start with Blagojevich, but then Rahm Emanuel, right? These are all figures that, as you report, what Senator Fitzgerald of Illinois called the combine, the Illinois bipartisan combine, Republicans and Democrats united to rob the people. What have we learned about Blagojevich? What have we learned about Rahm Emanuel?
Well, you know, I mean, it's pretty obvious, I think, that Rahm Emanuel is the one on those tapes, you know. And when I first looked at the indictment, when I saw Valerie Jarrett, and I knew it was Valerie Jarrett, number one, for the Senate seat, that was a red flag. That was a red flag for me last fall when she dropped out of the race, before I had any idea this was going on. When I saw that, it was like, what is she doing dropping out of the race? I mean, I know she wants that. So I went online and I went and dug through all my files to see what was up, what could possibly be up, you know. And again, not knowing about this at all, that this was going on, you know. But see, the Tribune didn't run a story, and because Fitzgerald talked him out of it. So if the Tribune knew that Fitzgerald was onto this, I'm thinking that somebody tipped Obama's camp off, and that's when Jarrett grabbed, you know, her name out of the race, But it was too late because they got Rama on tape, it sounds like, all over the place. But she was the main one.
In effect, that, the famous leak to the Chicago Tribune where they revealed in a published story several days in advance of the arrest of Blagojevich that Blagojevich's phone was tapped. This was a kind of a warning to the Obama people. Pull back. Don't go any further, or you'll all be in jail before you get to the White House.
Well, yeah, but, you know, that they did that, but they were going to write a story about a month before that, and Fitzgerald talked them out of it. And that's what I'm saying. It coincides with when Jarrett grabbed herself out of the race. I think somebody tipped Obama's camp off then that he had Blagojevich's phone tapped, and that's why she pulled out.
Wonderful. Now, Valerie Jarrett, for those who don't recall, of course, is the charming lady who gave Michelle Obama her first job in Mayor Daley's corrupt office. Valerie Jarrett, of course, is a kind of a – she's like a Lady Rezko, right? She's part of the development community, the gentrification community, I guess we can call it. So she's up to her neck in that, and she wanted to be in the Senate, as you say. What would you say we've learned about Michelle Obama?
Well, you know, Michelle, remember when with Hillary, how they went back about, you know, examined all her contracts when she worked at that law firm and everything? If anybody take a look at Michelle Obama, she never did nothing in her life. You know, I mean, she just moved up from the Daley administration, followed Jared up the line to that Chicago University. And then as soon as Obama became senator, she got that $150,000 raise. Then she got on that board making $100,000 from that I forget which one it was, but Walmart was their biggest customer. I mean, she is a nothing.
Treehouse Foods.
Yeah. She's a nothing. And so I don't know why people aren't looking at how the hell she ever got up so she's making so much money. You know, when she's like her husband. You can't find any accomplishment for either one of them how they became millionaires.
I believe we have one of the tapes is Blagojevich saying among his, with his foul mouth going all the time, if Michelle Obama can get on corporate boards, my wife, Patty Blagojevich, ought to be able to get on corporate boards, too.
Well, I agree. I think Patty's done more than Michelle. She went out there and hustled in the real estate field. You know, I mean, she's made a lot of money, and certainly because of her husband trading contracts with the people she was dealing with. But I would agree with him there. If Michelle can, so should she.
All right, so we have limited time now. What do you think, what comes next? Where does this all go? Any ideas?
Well, you know, the big thing nobody's looking at is the indictment below the Senate ruckus, okay? Nobody's looking at that. That's where we're going, and that's where Obama's going to come in, okay, with the charges that were ready to go against Blagojevich to begin with before this all came about. I mean, you know, it's just, who would have thought that he would be so gutsy to do this when he knew he was a hair's away from being indicted for all the other things, you know. But if you look down the indictment, go down the indictment and look down to that plan, that hospital planning board scheme, that is where Obama fits in, okay? To get that in place, to pull that pay-for-play scheme off, they had to pass legislation. And Obama was in the Senate, and he's the one that pushed that legislation through.
All right, so we've got to look at the hospital planning board.
Right.
And that's where Obama does the work in the Illinois State Senate to make the stealing easier.
Right, to pump
make
up money. Yeah, because he was raising money for his U.S. Senate run. And so that's the money that got funneled to him for his U.S. Senate run.
Otherwise, it's correct that Obama basically served as kind of a campaign manager for Blagojevich in 2002, that they are quite close.
Yes. Sure, they were, I laugh so hard when the media says that they weren't close. Yes, they were close. You know, and Blagojevich was in the midst of everything when he was running the last time, and Obama came out and endorsed him.
Can you hang on for a minute? We'll just skip you through the break and a few more points, and then off we go.
Okay.
Back in a minute on World Crisis Radio.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Hello again from World Crisis Radio, and we're still on with Evelyn Pringle. Evelyn, I remember in one of your fine articles, you read about the fashion show with Patty Blagojevich, Michelle Obama, and the charming Madame Rezko. So this is all one clique of people.
Oh, they're all there, yeah. Yeah, and that was after Tony was arrested, you know, at this fashion show. You didn't hear much about it, you know. That's how they do these things in Illinois. But the whole gang was there. You know, all the ones that are under investigation for the pay-to-play schemes, you know, in government at that time, they were all there. But I want to tell your listeners, this is what you need to worry about with Obama that I see. He's got this great job creation plan coming up. I was concerned he was going to, you know, bring the Chicago mob to the Washington and get a hold of HUD and spread it over the whole country and do this rehabbing of low-income housing with our tax dollars. Well, now I see he's got the whole deal. He's going to do the highways, he's going to do the schools. No, this is a grand plot. You can bet he's got these contractors all lined up already for this big job creation thing that he's going to do with our money. And it's going to end up the same way that it ended up in Chicago with all that rehab, low-income housing, all that money made by those crooks off the backs of poor people in Chicago.
So watch for Obama's organized crime allies and combine allies to skim as much as possible off these infrastructure contracts and so forth.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, and this is where the combine comes in. Because in Illinois, as far as the highways and stuff, that usually was the Republicans that were in on that, like Cellini and stuff. You know, he's been arrested, William Cellini there. So these must be the deals that he put in place before he ever got there. So this Chicago combine has spread over the whole country. Blagojevich has made sure of that. You know, he's got money. He's flown to New York. He gave that contract to the guy in California, you know, for the tollway. This is all over the country already.
Okay, so now we know what to look for. Evelyn, maybe we'll get you back in a couple of weeks and we'll report on the unfolding of the scandal. I suppose the interesting thing here is if Blagojevich goes to some kind of a trial, or if he – maybe we just speculate for one second. Would you say Blagojevich is mentally unstable?
No. Well, as far as the whole gang there, that corrupt gang is unstable, maybe. I mean, I think they all are. I mean, how can you just constantly be so corrupt and not have it bother you? But to try to say that Obama is above any of them is ridiculous.
No, Obama, he basically swims in the cesspool of corruption represented by the combine. But what I'm thinking about is this idea. I mean, Blagojevich sounds to me like a megalomaniac. I mean, you had discovered this idea that Blagojevich thought he could be president of the United States. This is above his pay grade. But he believes it. Maybe he believes it if he says, well, if I'm going down, I'm going to be like Samson and I'm going to pull the whole temple down on your head, Obama.
He will. I have no doubt of that. And I don't
well, that's
think...
an interesting potential then. So there's a kind of that could be an escape clause for the rest of us from the Obama regime.
Well,
at
I
some
think
point.
So. And remember, Fitzgerald he always works his way down. So the fact that he didn't go to Obama yet, you know, you might want to think about that.
Okay.
Because Obama moved up ahead of Blagojevich while all this was transcending.
Okay. Well, let me thank Evelyn Pringle. Evelyn, do you have a website? Do you have any place people can keep up with you?
No, but they can find me if they type my name in on a Google search. They can find me.
Okay, so Pringle, P-R-I-N-G-L-E. That's Evelyn Pringle. I think the most authoritative person writing and observing this Illinois bipartisan combine with Blagojevich, Obama, Michelle Obama, Janulius, Rezko, Auchi, Alsamari, and the entire gang. I've learned a lot from her work. Thank you so much, Evelyn, and happy holiday. So on we go with World Crisis Radio. Now, I believe we have another guest waiting in the wings, if I'm correct, and that would be Phil Berg. Are you there, Phil? Not yet. Okay, fine. So we're going to get Phil Berg. In the meantime... We'll get Phil Berg maybe in the next segment. Let me talk just for a second now about this Arne Duncan appointment, because I think if you want to see the essence of the Obama regime in a nutshell, look at this Arne Duncan. He is the person who has been the CEO, Chief Executive Officer of the Chicago school system. What is his method? Well, his method is basically the Austrian school applied to education. Privatization, deregulation, union busting, and the race to the bottom, and militarization, and the presence of the authoritarian police state, which necessarily follows out of the tremendous privations and dislocations of this austerity regime. We have a number of interesting websites. Let me just recommend. There's a woman called Susan Ohanan, O-H-A-N-A-N, writes about this. There's another one called The Chancellor's New Clothes. That's mainly about Michelle Rhee. What you've got to remember now is in Obama, the unauthorized biography, I devote a great deal of attention to the fact that that Obama comes from the foundation world, that foundations are the family business. His mother worked for the Ford. Obama works for the foundations, the Woods, the Joyce, the Gamaliel, the Annenberg. His friend Bernardine Dorn has money from the MacArthur Foundation. Bill Ayers has money from the Annenberg Foundation. All of these subversives, incendiaries, provocateurs, and wreckers of human society are funded by the oligarchical foundations. It's kind of neo-feudalism mediated through the foundations. Now, in this case, the big push is coming from the foundations to reform education. Reform education essentially means bust the unions, destroy the free, compulsory, universal public school tradition here in the United States, and turn this into a commercial market where oligarchs can go to private schools and the losers can go to low-quality, militarized schools. And that is what we see with this Arne Duncan. One account of him says, imagine Paul Bremer, the viceroy sent into Baghdad by the Bush-Rumsfeld regime. Imagine Paul Bremer without the combat boots, and you have Arne Duncan, surrounded by a group of free market fanatic Republicans, neoliberals, who are mainly interested in busting the teachers' union. His appointment, Arne Duncan's appointment, has been met with tremendous consternation by teachers and other people actually interested in education. This may be the worst of all, the most transparently worst of all of Barkey's appointments. He's got a troop of zealots. He wants charter schools. Charter schools means you shut down public schools. You fire the teachers, shut down the schools. You create a parallel school system with no union, and you militarize that. You turn those into military schools. There are now about half a dozen military high schools in Chicago under the aegis of Arne Duncan. So a new element of creeping fascism being endorsed by Barkey Obama. Back in a minute.
This is the GCN Radio Network, home to hard-hitting talk radio.
Crisis Radio. We're reviewing the Arne Duncan appointment as Secretary of Education, the worst of all the appointments in some ways in terms of the future of this country. Here's what you have, this clique. You have Arne Duncan in Chicago. You have Joel Klein in New York City. And you have Michelle Rhee here in Washington, D.C. Now, Michelle Rhee, her game is the most obvious. She's a union buster, and her job is to shut down and destroy the D.C. public school system and replace it with this regime of charter schools, which will be without unions. And here's what she does. She goes to teachers, and she says, okay, teacher, as per your union contract, you have tenure, you have job security, you have seniority. What I'll do is I'll buy you out. I'm going to put you into a special class of teachers with merit pay, but I'm going to take away your tenure, take away your job security, take away your seniority. And she offers them money for this. Where does she get the money? Well, she refuses to say. She says, I don't want to tell you where I get this money. She's a public official, and she's got large amounts of money. Where does she get it? Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the union-busting, low-wage, monopolist, conspiracy in restraint of trade, Bill Gates, the hypocrite who never should have had that money. He should be expropriated. And he got a lot of money from Warren Buffett. Remember that? You've got the Kern Family Fund, apparently. For sure you've got the Broad Foundation and the Donald Dell Foundation. They give money to Michelle Rhee to essentially bust the union gradually by bribing individual teachers to give up their tenure, give up their job security and their seniority, and open themselves to this merit pay concept, which is what Obama ran on. Create a charter school. There's no union. Essentially, what Arne Duncan has done, you take a community where there's no housing, there are no jobs, the incarceration rate among the parents is sky high, there are gangs everywhere, poverty, despair, organized crime, gangs, whatever you want. And you bring in, obviously you bring in this testing criteria that Bush has pioneered, right? No child left behind. And you take the school and you find that it's a failing school because the kids are all coming from this background and they have a rough time. So you fire all the teachers. Then you bring in another bunch of teachers. You take the same test in a year or two. Still a failure, you fire those teachers. So you basically recycled it down. And after one or two rounds of that, you can declare it a charter school and bring in others and get ready to fire them. But as you're doing this, you're ratcheting down. It's a kind of recycling program. Duncan says his job is to blur the line between public and private. That is one of the essential concepts of the Mussolini fascist corporate state. Now, it's interesting, the American Federation of Teachers, the AFT, the Teachers Union, President Randy Weingarten. By the way, Randy Weingarten should be added to the list of Sweeney, Hoffa, Gettelfinger, and Andy Stern, who should be coming out with a general strike in support of the auto workers and in support of themselves. How about a united front of the Teachers Union and the UAW and the Teamsters and the rest of them to defend employment and production and quality public education in North America? Don't hold your breath, but that's what a real trade union movement would do. The AFT originally endorsed Hillary Clinton. Obama snubbed them. They had their convention in Chicago in July, and Obama refused to come in person. He wouldn't talk to them in person. He appeared by video. And in particular, the Chicago Teachers Union, the CTU, largely black, was extremely dismayed by the behavior of Barkey. Duncan, this new Secretary of Education, is big on military academies. He's got a cadet corps for students. He's got junior ROTC, six military high schools where the kids wear uniforms already in Chicago. So what you've got is this guy talks about all the time, social Darwinism. It's a model of punitive schools, surveillance, cops everywhere, zero tolerance as an excuse to terrorize people, penal pedagogy, closed schools, fire teachers, market choice for the wealthy, and especially if you can get some vouchers, asset stripping of the public sector. That is the trademark of this character, Duncan. Now, here in Washington, D.C., Michelle Rhee, we've talked about Michelle Rhee. Just as we were talking about Michelle Rhee, she appeared on the cover of Time magazine, the Time magazine cover story about Michelle Rhee. She was put in by Fenty, Adrian Fenty, a politician very similar to Obama, who came in, and the first thing he did was to kick out the elected school board, destroy the traditional elected school board, and then begin to impose these so-called reforms. So you get the idea. Now, interestingly, Caroline Kennedy, the oligarch and degenerate, I think we can say without too much danger, who wants to become senator from the state of New York, her job has been something similar. You see, Michelle Rhee goes to the foundations, to the Gates, the Broad, the Dell, possibly the Kern Foundation. In the case of Joel Klein, he's into the same business of busting the teachers union on the installment plan. Caroline Kennedy is one of his operatives to go out and get the money from the private foundations that he needs as a kind of a war chest to destroy the union by buying people out. Now, again, out of this comes a situation where there is no free, universal, compulsory public education, and this of course means that you're dealing with a different country. That's not the United States of America anymore, as it has been since the days of Horace Mann in Massachusetts and other reforms. If you don't have a decent public school system, you have taken another huge step towards an oligarchical society where the rich rule and the poor have no stake. What we're seeing now is the intellectual bankruptcy of the entire U.S. elite. It is a crisis of the ruling class itself. They love derivatives. They hate production. They love bankers. They are bankers. They hate blue-collar workers. This is a society careening towards an early thermodynamic breakdown crisis, in other words, towards doom. The question is that civilization itself, the future of human life in any form, civilized or not, is now in danger. And what has to grow is class consciousness in the sense that Plato had it, which is you have now got a situation where there is an oligarchical ruling class. They are incompetent. They are perfectly unable to run a modern society. They are dysfunctional in the extreme. A policy alternative to them must be created on an urgent basis. It means ideas, and it means, above all, the New Deal alternative, which is the obvious one, the one that worked in the last depression and with refinements would work even better in the current depression, must be implemented. There is, on the other hand, no organized force fighting for that, and we've got Herbert Hoover in the form of Bush. We've got Andrew Mellon in the form of the Southern Republicans, let's say. The Southern Republicans like Shelby and McConnell and DeMint and others, say, in the House of Representatives, who say, let everything go bankrupt, don't do anything, let it all go down, and then there'll be a recovery. Well, too bad if you die in the course of the crash before the recovery comes. So we've got all that. We've got Herbert Hoover. We've got Andrew Mellon. We've got Benito Mussolini in the form of Obama and company. How about the New Deal? How about the inherent American system tradition going back to Winthrop, Franklin, Alexander Hamilton, Henry Clay, Friedrich List, Henry Carey, Abraham Lincoln, the populists, Franklin D. Roosevelt, John F. Kennedy. That's our tradition. Nobody seems to stand for this today. We'll be back in a minute. The question of the ruling elite. We are now saddled with a decadent, degenerate, incompetent ruling class. They are incapable of directing the fortunes of 300 million people in this country and having that big influence that they do have on the world beyond. It's instructive to see how they treat Senate seats. Obviously, most Senate seats are now considered hereditary. They're the hereditary property of some family. Caroline Kennedy comes forward and says, I want that Senate seat. Well, why is that? Well, it's obvious one of these New York seats used to be held by Robert Kennedy, but I guess she's saying, well, my Uncle Ted Kennedy is now coming towards the end of his career, so we won't have that Massachusetts seat, so we Kennedys demand a Senate seat, not to be left behind Even the upstart Biden is attempting to transfer a Senate seat to his stooge, one of his office managers, with the hope that he can then bequeath it to his corrupt, fascistoid son, Bo Biden. And you look around at other Senate seats, you look at the Senate, and you'll see these names like, you know, Bai and Dodd and God knows what. The large, large numbers in the U.S. Senate are there not because of any ability they have, but because of their oligarchical parents or close relatives. And again, of course, George Bush, the most obvious of all of these, right, the son of a president. It looks like you're getting a ruling class that you have to be born into or marry into or buy your way into. But a lot of the Senate seats now seem to be hereditary, and this indicates a sclerosis and atrophy and decline of the entire system. And the only way out of that is that people who understand some of these matters have to come together with the requisite intellectual and moral courage to create some new ideas, to create a movement that is actually capable of leading this society out of the crisis. That's the big problem. Politics is not sitting on the sidelines and sniping at the current regime and the people who currently run it. The demand made on those who would like to accomplish something is, you don't like the people that are in power, you take power. And that means you provide an alternative way of running this society. And unfortunately, the right-wing Austrian school does not give you that. As we saw with Barry Goldwater, Ronald Reagan, and other reactionary Republicans, the right-wing anarchist, anti-government, anti-big government, pro-free trade, free market, free enterprise demagogy is just that. It's a demagogy you can use to run for office. But nobody has ever gotten into power and then implemented that demagogy because it's simply impossible. And today, we're now in the realm of lots and lots of government action. The only question is, what kind of government action? If you stand on the sidelines yelling free market, you are putting yourself in the historical deep freeze. You are condemning yourself to be permanently irrelevant. A joke. A distraction. You're basically taking yourself out of the political debate. Imagine going up to a starving man on a bread line saying, buddy, let me tell you about the glories of the Austrian school and why you shouldn't want the nanny state. Obviously, you can see that the Austrian school and von Hayek, this is something that appeals to people that are already in a relatively comfortable position themselves, certainly not facing existential crisis. It's an ideological, abstract argument. It doesn't offer you anything. And what we saw in the primaries of 2008 was the candidate who talked about abolishing the nanny state got absolutely nowhere. Even in the Republican primaries, it was the clever demagogue Huckabee who talked about the Wall Street Republicans versus the Walmart Republicans, the Country Club Republicans versus the Sam's Club Republicans, and putting himself on the side of some kind of economic populism. That is the one who took away the votes that might have been mobilized to create an alternative to the current system. So if the current regime is Herbert Hoover, if we've got Benito Mussolini waiting in the wings, it makes no sense to go out preaching the doctrine of Andrew Mellon, liquidate stocks, liquidate bonds, liquidate real estate, liquidate labor, liquidate factories, liquidate everything, and then hope for a recovery. Modern society doesn't work that way. Too many people die in the process of liquidation. These ideologues come forward and tell us about Schumpeter. Let's go up to a man on a starving man or woman on a breadline and say, hey, buddy, let me tell you about creative destruction. You'd be lucky to escape with your life if the guy has any energy. The creative destruction is supposedly the idea that periodically everything has got to be flattened and economic activity has to come to a screeching halt, and then out of that you get a new recovery. Well, it has never happened. And again, too many people have to die. If you don't like the nanny state, let's take the opportunity here now of the Christmas season. Look at your aging relatives. Look at your own parents, if they're still around. Look at your elderly aunt or uncle or people like this, and realize that without Social Security, and above all without Medicare, or really both of them equally important, a lot of these people would be dead. And if you take away Social Security and Medicare, and Medicaid for the poor who are not quite old enough to get Social Security and Medicare, you're talking about death on a very large scale. Some would say, well, the Austrian school doesn't say take it all away immediately. It says wean people gradually. No, 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 no. That is the Newt Gingrich strategy. That basically says let it wither on the vine. That was Gingrich. He realized that he couldn't have a direct frontal assault on Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, because the backlash would have been too great. So he said, what we'll do is starve it gradually. That was Newt Gingrich. So the current representatives of the Austrian school are preaching essentially the same thing that Newt Gingrich talked about 15 years ago. And the direction we need to go in is the opposite one. Beef up Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, unemployment benefits, food stamps. We've probably got about 20 to 25% of the United States right now surviving on food stamps. We need to go in the opposite direction. People who thought they had a pension with their IRAs and 401ks will get virtually nothing out of it. And there's no power in the universe that can keep those values up. The only thing we can do is move rapidly to increase the size of the Social Security pension so it actually becomes a living pension, to stop the gouging and cutting and looting and sacking of Medicare and Medicaid so it actually pays enough so doctors can survive and hospitals can survive on it once they've been shorn of their poisonous derivatives. We should give some of these people up to get a derivative in their stocking for Christmas in lieu of a piece of coal, since we've now gone completely into the realm of paper and toxicity. So if you're dealing with a situation where people's private pensions, this entire lunatic experiment of going into IRAs and 401ks, in other words, exposing people's retirement to the inevitable panics and crashes and collapses and disintegrations of the stock market, you're going to have to go back to Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid in the classic forms and increase them. The other thing we've got to think about, and this gets us right back to Scrooge, are there no prisons, no workhouses, the treadmill? We've got to have federal emergency relief. You look at the number of people that are homeless, right? A lot of cities are reporting vastly increased numbers of homeless. We're going to need a new Harry Hopkins to come in there with federal emergency relief, Works Progress Administration, Public Works Administration, CWA, and the like, to keep people from freezing, starving, and otherwise dying in the coming depression winter. So that's the task, not implementing the Austrian school, but saving human civilization and saving human life. Best greetings of the season to all.